a very good morning and a warm welcome to this new panel. It is truly an honor and a pleasure to be here again at Capital Link to moderate the panel titled The Green Transition. Will it continue? What a question, huh? Not easy. And for that, I'm truly honored and delighted to have a great lineup. To begin with, Mr. Captain Peter Liu coming into stage now.
Sorry for the late.
No worries. You made a good entrance. So that's good. So Global Director for Commercial AD. We also have Mr. John Soon, Founder, President and CEO of Erasmus Ship Invest Group. Mr. Neil Sadden, Managing Director, Haren Group. Mr. Lawrence Otfield, Chairman of Otfield. And Mr. Shmuel Joskovic, CEO of Express Feeders. And I truly mean it. I think we are privileged to have these panelists because they really all have great examples of how to support the green transition. But yeah, coming back to it, so will it continue? This is quite a multifaceted question, actually, and it covers many dimensions. Now, if you look at the geopolitical point of view, one could say, are we moving backwards, at least in the short term? But when then you actually, you know, look at the industry and see there's actually things happening, piloting, innovation, collaboration. So I think it's whether it will continue or not. I think the key question is, are we doing it fast enough or not? But anyhow, to address this very complex question, I suggest we slice it down in different dimensions from the regulatory side, the technological side, the finance side, to hopefully come to a conclusion at the end. So let's get started, and maybe from the regulatory side. Now, regulations are really coming thick and fast now, right? We have the EU ETS, we have the fuel UE maritime. I would like to hear from you, and maybe we can start with you, Shmulik. Do these regulations give you enough confidence to move ahead to make investments? How do you deal with them as a ship owner?
You hear me? good morning. Actually, I think you asked if we are going fast enough or not. I think now we are probably starting to realize that we are going at a rational pace. When you look at the investment in the green transition, I think in 22 and 23, there was a lot of talk about almost zero or nothing. Mm-hmm. We will burn green fuels in 2030, we'll go to zero. And in reality, when you look at making vessels more efficient and emitting less CO2, we can split it into two. One is the retrofits. Special paints, changing the hull, putting energy-saving devices. All these are actually excellent investments. Double digits IRRs, you return them in 18 to 36 months. And the most important thing, you don't depend on your clients. Mm. And the second thing to do is green fuels. Now, I apologize if I'm being cynical, but just to base it, right, we have vessels, we are one of the few in the world who actually burn biomethanol. So we have ordered 14 vessels, 8 of them already delivered, and 4 are actually burning biomethanol in Europe now, as we speak. The issue is, we only have one client willing to pay. Mm. And now, in the middle of 24, the EU changed the regulation and recognized LNG as being a green fuel, which is very interesting chemically, but fine. And I think this decision, and I'm not blaming the EU, by the way, the reason the EU changed it is most probably The fact that no one else supported it in the world. So why should the Europeans pay for this only? And I think this decision, together with where the IMO discussions are going, green fuels usage will be delayed for a long time. I don't see anything really happening until the early 2030s, or unless some kind of miracle happens and nuclear or something else become common in order to be able to actually produce green fuels.
No, thank you. Thank you so much. Niels, any thoughts from your side?
Well, I think everybody's always kind of hoping for an easy answer and a quick answer and one answer that solves all the issues on hand, which is actually not the case at all. And what I now see, not only in our company, but also in the industry as such, is that everybody's kind of going for different parts of the overall solution, all at the same time. A kind of convergence of all the different potential solutions from retrofits, as you mentioned, to different fuels, to new designs, etc. And I think this overall kind of approach, where no one really knows what will be the final solution in the end, is exactly the approach we need right now, where there is a willingness to try and to a willingness to give it a chance to see if this kind of solution helps, or this solution helps, or this solution helps. And in our case, we have we've ordered new buildings for methanol, which will be delivered this year, which is a new thing for us. It's the first time that we have these ships to be entered to the fleet. But this is not a given that this is the kind of the only fuel or alternative fuel we will have in our fleet long term, right? It's just like a first step, because when we ordered, this was an available solution. Ammonia wasn't ready at that time. So let's see where we will develop over time. But this is just important to actually get going and to actually go for those solutions that are available right now.
Yes.
The overarching question, will it continue? Yes, I think there is no reason to believe that any climate change challenge will go away just because we have a different political flavor. Okay. Right? This is just not going to happen.
That's good to hear. John, from your side, any thoughts?
Yeah, thank you very much. Very good morning to everyone. Thank you so much for the invite, and I'm be honored to be back again with almost the same panel fellows. And I think to the EU ETS topics, my personal feeling is that still it's kind of messy situation. So I think the industry is yet to say how it can be eventually being practically executed and how in practice this EU ETS can go through. I would very much echo what Mr. Toft, the CEO of MSC, said last week. I think it's a mess all over the world because there's no unified measures and solutions. Only Europe doesn't mean anything. Mm-hmm. Right, it's very difficult to quantify also how this can be eventually be calculated. It's, I think, overall for Europe, for the world, there's other priorities to put on instead of EU ETS things at the moment. I think that's why, from Erasmus Group, we are trying over the last few years not to be part of this concern, let's say. That's why we also try to diversify different business domain now, especially on the smaller ships segments. So some of our LPG gas carriers, for example, they are even smaller than what EU ETS been regulated. Mm-hmm. So that's some part of the reason why we try to diversify, go into different business domains. Mm-hmm. So on the other hand, of course, we fully appreciate the diversity about the investment strategies, because each company has its own position. So, for example, if I were a CEO of a state-owned shipping company, no matter which state, which country, I don't care. I could easily do dual fuel, three fuel, multiple fuel, whatever. So, right? So I think this diversity, I mean, is fully respected. So it's, each company is just own potato. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing the different perspectives. So we have covered regulations. Let's move on into fuels, right? We see that the order book, it's evolving in the sense that more and more dual fuel vessels are being ordered. However, the reality is that 92% of the sailing fleet is sailing with the normal fuels, right? So it's very difficult, and it's a huge decision to order such without having a crystal ball. But I mean, AET has been a bit of a pioneer and a first mover. Captain Peter, how do you take such decisions without having that, you know, long-term certainty?
Thanks, Christina. It's always a pleasure sitting beside you, Christina.
Likewise.
And thanks for having me. It is true. It's not the most easiest of decisions. But if you recall, Christina and everybody, last year, same venue, same events, there was a rally call of actions, right? But of course, there's also challenges. The field is not level. So when you talk about regulations and so on and so forth, it actually, the way we look at it is, it's moving in the right directions. We need to level the playing field. Without leveling the playing field, as you said, it will be a very difficult decision. Mm-hmm. If the fields are level, then the decisions are easy. Irrespective of whatever the decisions you make, it's going to be a short-term, mid-term, or long-term decision. For AET, we are very clear with our target, 2030 and 2050. We have a very good board and stakeholders and shareholders who are very supportive of our agenda. Okay, so we are very clear with 2030, 2050. We draw our very practical trajectory. We stay very close to our trajectory. And with that, we find a proper, like-minded partners to partner us. We said it many times. To get into a project as big as this and as risky as this, we need to have right-minded partners who are willing to share the risk together, be it from the shipyard, to the financial, to the charterers, okay, and everybody. So once, if the risk burden is shared equally or collectively with all the like-minded partners, then the risk will be low. Mm-hmm. That is how we go about doing or investing into this high-end so-called untested technologies and all these things. But this is only on the investment part. There's still many other uncertainties that come behind the investment, which is the operations, the safeties, the resource, the expertise, as well as, more importantly, the availability of the fuel itself. That's what the panelists have mentioned. So there's still a lot of uncertainties, but we need to stay to our trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
Because as an organization, we know that this problem is not going to go away overnight or for a period of time. It's going to be here whether we like it or not. So we might as well get cracking now. Sooner is better than later.
Thank you. Thank you, Captain Peter. And I just need to make this comment because it's true. We were here last year, and I'm really glad to see that AET in this last year has taken further action and continue to order other vessels with other alternative fuels. So, you know, really, again, continue to be in at the forefront. And I think it's thanks to companies like you that, you know, we will really manage to move the needle and keep on this complicated transition ahead of us. But Niels, what your view, from your side and your company, any views on alternative fuels and how to choose? How do you do that?
As I mentioned, we don't have a clear view that this or that fuel will be the long-term solution. I think it's just important to move ahead and to be part of this development, because we cannot wait until the solution is generally available for everybody. So we have to move ahead and do what's possible. And that is not for just kind of being compliant only, but actually also to move forward as an industry needs people to actually do this step, take that risk. And in the example I mentioned of the methanol vessels that we have ordered, which is dual fuel, I am pretty certain that we will not go on methanol in the very first few voyages, but we are ready, and it's a long-term investment. We engage the fleets in our own trade, so it's for our own cargoes. So if the fuel isn't fully available in our trading areas in the beginning, it's still worth the investment because it's a long-term perspective on the ship for another 25, 30 years. Mm-hmm. So it's this long-term view that is important, or is actually key to come to such decisions, to take the risk of the initial additional pricing in the beginning, yeah, to harvest on that in the later stages. Mm-hmm. So that's our view on approaching this. But it's not just the fuel discussion alone. It's about the whole design, from kind of the optimized hull shape to all other kind of potential steps you can take in order to get the overall efficiency, yes, up, kind of significantly up compared to what was possible before. Mm. So it's, I think, key is really the long-term view, and to have a strategy, an idea of where the market might develop, in mm-hmm. order just to take the opportunistic short-term view, which is very kind of, it's close to impossible at the moment, yes, to come to its conclusion short-term, but long-term, I think this is it.
I think that's really key. Thank you so much, having that long-term view. And you mentioned about energy efficiency. Let's hold that thought, because we will tap into that a little bit. Before that, Shmulik, you have also, you ordered vessels with methanol, but you also said that it's only one charter that is willing to pay. Do you see that evolving anytime soon, or what's your view?
I don't know how you say it in English. The opposite of evolving is devolving.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to say this, but I really, so we are using now, and I doubt that if we'll sit here next year, or probably in 2 years' time, we will continue to use it. By the way, I never expected, when we ordered the vessel, that on their first voyage they will actually burn methanol and somebody will pay for it. So it is an achievement.
Yeah.
But I really think to use green fuels on long-term steady state, you need government support, either through subsidies or taxation of black fuels, because the gap in price is simply too big. We are talking about, so we use them in Europe, so you can compare it to MGO. You are talking about 3.5 to 4 times more per unit of energy. Mm-hmm. Now, you can't be the single one doing that.
No.
And we are lucky to have Evergreen as our client and paying for it, which is really incredible. But the minute that the EU said that LNG is a green fuel, Evergreen have enough vessels with LNG mm-hmm. to offset their fuel EU. And they will rightfully, most probably, reduce their consumption of methanol.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, we've done it partly because of the good fortune of shipping over the past few years enabled us to invest in it. And I fully agree with what Neil said about the fact that we need to try. We need to invest in the future and not wait for it to happen, because each one of us will define the future. So we did it, and we hope that, first of all, after us, others ordered the similar vessels. And we now have experience about using methanol. And the problem is, the world is not catching up with that, and I think we'll go backwards.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you. Let's see how it evolves in the next years. But it's important to ground us and understand what is actually happening.
Yeah.
Right? So we have talked about fuels, right? And that's a bit of long-term, going back to Neil's comment, which I fully agree. But we need to act now. We needed to act yesterday already. And for that, the solutions are energy efficiency, right? And we know that, certainly as per our DNV Maritime forecast, that energy efficiency devices can help us reduce fuel consumption by at least 16%. And Lawrence, over to you, because Odfjell has really been a pioneer on this. And I would really like you to share with us and this audience what are you doing? Your thoughts?
Well, first of all, a pleasure to be here. This is my first time participating here. First, you mentioned 16%, actually, I think one can achieve better than that, depending on circumstances, depending on what segment you're in. Our numbers are very different, much higher than that. We are in AER improvement of 53% in 2024. And of course, we started from a better starting point against benchmark 2008. So in real terms, we've improved by 40%. And those 40%, maybe 10 percentage points are operational measures, weather routing, et cetera. But we have actually done 30%, more than double what the DNV, almost double what DNV says on just technical energy saving devices. So basically, our strategy has been, one, this energy efficiency is good for business.
Mm.
So efficiency, 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 that's one of our pillars of work. And we've been laser focused on this for the last 10, 12 years. And this doesn't happen overnight either. So those that now say they're going to do stuff, it takes time to get this on the water and delivering results. The other pillar for us is fuel flexibility. And that's extremely important in what we've just spoken about, changing regulatory issues. So having fuel flexibility as a premise, and that's available as technology today. There's no excuse not to think fuel flexibility. With that, we took away the barriers of action years ago. Actually, it's very frustrating sometimes for me to come to these seminars, to listen to the opening ceremony yesterday and speak about stuff that we've been doing for years. We can do more now and it's available.
Mm.
That's, I think, where I would start.
Yeah, thank you. It's a good start.
Yeah.
Absolutely. John, any thoughts from your side?
Sorry. I think, as said, diversity is fully respected. Well, from our side, I'm still thinking about, again, the old-fashioned calculations. So again, all the investment, all the development is dependent on what kind of mathematics returns can be really mm-hmm. making sense. So again, in this world, I heard that, of course, in the past few forums, panels, the openly heard word is uncertainties.
Yes.
Well, on the other hand, myself, I'm feeling that comparing about a few years back, we were talking about uncertainties. It's very fair. Today, I think the certainty is even prevailing now. Mm. So the trend is very clear. The big picture, I think, about the world, about the whole situation, about global trade is I think, is quite clear than years back.
Yes.
So it's, we are going to a very different directions. So I think from all the decision making, we are still trying to make sure that the risk exposed is less than what we are expecting on the return
mm-hmm.
of yielding. So this is all the way of we are doing. I think that's part, for that part, I would say that by comparing with, of course, the fuel efficiency is always a good thing
yes.
because it's making better profits and also meeting our charter customers' requirement and preference.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if you talk about economics of the investment, I would say that, of course, as Shamil, I think we talked about quite often, if we think about today, by investing similar amount of money to buy very old container vessels and charter out 1 or 2 years, the return is still very robust.
Mm.
Than thinking about new investment on a new domain without anything known yet. Mm. So it's all the concept is beautiful, but whether it will be really materialized is another question mark, I think. Yeah.
Thank you, John. Please, Lawrence.
Just an idea of, since we are, this is Capital Link and we have some financiers in this room, every investment we've done on energy saving has been good business. On average, is less than 2 year payback. I don't know of any better business than that. Okay, so this is good business in any circumstance, any political, geopolitical risk scenario. If you can reduce your cost of operations, you're going to be better off. You're going to be afloat when others are not.
Mm. And Loris, I mean, you've been an Odfjell pioneer. How has been your experience when speaking about financiers? Right? Had any roadblocks with them, or was it easy to convince, or how was it?
Well, no, actually, because we've been data driven and been able to show our figures, we've gotten tremendous support from banks, and we did the first sustainability bond back in, I don't even remember now, it's maybe 6 years ago, and we last year introduced the transition finance framework, also a way for others also to access financing. What that does is the use of proceeds, so banks can clearly see what segment or tranche of a loan goes towards green. So it's there's no room for greenwashing, say. So we have gotten tremendous support in this journey. And it's, that means also that we're getting better pricing, of course, on term sheets. So for us, it's been a good journey.
Yeah, that's good to hear.
And I see a lot of interest of institutions to support more of this type of, they just need the good projects.
That gives us hope. So that's good. That's maybe from the energy efficiency side. But what about from the alternative fuel side, Captain Peter?
Sorry, if I talk about what the financial can do better, if I say they didn't do anything, they might not invite me the next year. They might not even borrow me money anymore. So I think on the financial side, I think they are doing things. We can see that. But I also must say is that there's more that they could do to support the owners. As I mentioned earlier, Christina, it's a big investment. It's a risky investment, especially in new technologies. So the burden of risk have to be carried equally among all the stakeholders along the value chain. Okay, financial definitely can play a better part. I know that they've done quite a lot, and I think the financial can do more in order to support and to carry the burden of risk equally with the owners. On the fuel efficiency side, I agree with all the panelists. But I feel that sometimes maybe when it comes to fuel efficiency, are we coming to the end of the road as far as efficiency is concerned? Are we beating the horse to death? I mean, these are all the low-hanging fruit. These are all the short terms. I'm sure that every owner, as Lauren mentioned just now, the returns are good. Everybody wants efficiencies, but how much more can we push the efficiencies level before embarking into the real solutions or the more mid-term to long-term solutions? I think that is where the uncertainties lies, and that is where we say is that if all the players along the value chain come together, carry the risk together, and it will be a better solutions for the industry overall.
Perfect. Thank you so much for sharing, Captain Peter. I think we can move on to a topic that it's in all of our mind, I think, and we all get a bit of a shock when we wake up every day and read the news on what's happening, which is the geopolitical aspect. And for that, I would really like to hear all of our panelists' views, because I think it's extremely relevant and interesting. So maybe starting with you, Shmulik, what do you think the current geopolitical situation means for shipping and the decarbonization transformation? What's your views and your company's views?
The geopolitical for shipping or for decarbonization?
Decarbonization of the shipping industry.
For shipping in general, and I speak only about things I think I understand, which is container shipping. I think the current situation is not great. What the current US president is doing is slowly eroding any consumer confidence. I mean, all these crazy things about tariffs here, no tariffs, yes tariffs, $1 million on a Chinese vessel, all this, end of the day, it's taxes on the U.S. consumer and creating uncertainty. What consumers do, they will reduce their consumption. The first thing they reduce is what we carry in containers, because it's the least important thing carried, the essential thing carried.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm quite worried about where we'll end up. Again, maybe it will not happen in the next 2-3 months, but in the next 2 years, I'm not very optimistic. We had a great run, so, you know. And for the green transition, the problem is we need global cooperation. Europe tried to lead alone. The minute, in the current situation where no one is actually following, it's a big problem. And the big problem is for the transition to green fuels. I think energy efficiency drives will continue. New vessels design. We are looking, we talk about our dual fuel methanol vessels. So even if they burn VLSFO, they still consume about 50% of what SSWs from 15 years ago mm-hmm. consumed. So it's still reducing CO2 emission in general. So there are two sides, and if we want to be optimistic, we actually are. We reduced our emission per TU mile over the past 2 years by 30%. And we are burning methanol only in the last 6 months of 2024. So it's not that. A lot of this retrofit and having newer vessels improve efficiency tremendously. So we benefit as owner operators, and the environment benefits.
Mm. Thank you. Niels, any thoughts from your side?
Yeah, I think it makes sense in a situation like today where there's so much kind of additional uncertainty around, also geopolitically. It's important to zoom out from time to time and look at the larger kind of context of where are we on the journey to transition into a more greener way of doing our business. And I think this journey as such is totally intact. And maybe if we look back in 10, 15 years, we will probably see some sort of delay on the way, which is now. But I do not believe that this kind of will lead to a kind of turnaround into something new or kind of totally backwards, because it's the whole industry that has adapted from technology which is available and fuels all the way, of course, to all kind of employees ashore and on board of the ships. Mm-hmm. And we see this is a kind of a totally new setting where this direction, this journey is in full swing. It might be delayed for some kind of month or years, but I think it will continue. And one positive thing about regulation in this context is that they can kind of be a guiding light to mm-hmm. continue through this period where, for example, EU ETS and FuelEU are actually guiding lights to become more efficient, to focus more on these items. And because they have a price, very suddenly they come at a cost. Yeah. And as Lawrence mentioned, it's good investments anyway to be much more into efficiency in the green transition. But at the same time, the regulation also adds a price to it, and that guides us. And mm-hmm. I think this gives a lot of hope, besides all the uncertainties we see at the moment, which might sometimes be very short-lived. But in the long run, I think this is a clear direction we all need to follow, and we shall keep the focus on it.
Thank you so much. John, anything new, very quickly? Oh,
thank you. I remain different voices from the panel. Yeah. Thank you. So, again, back to the big picture, I think still we are at a wartime market, wartime situation. Still many, not many, but quite a few countries are still suffering, struggling, walking out of the war situation at the moment. That's why I feel it's very ironic that one side we're talking about environment protection. Of course, we all support that. We definitely support. We hope as a human being part, we really want to promote and boost the environmental friendly protection improvements. The other side, we are seeing a still very fragmented world. And as I think as Matt also mentioned, as I said earlier as well, we need to say a very unified policy for whole over shipping industry, not only from EU, not from America or Asia. We need a unified policy to say that together we make the things like probably under IMO umbrella or whoever. But at the moment, there's nothing. Mm. There's something. I have to correct. ballast water treatment system already in place. There are nothing we can change now, right? Mm. From tier 2, tier 3, all these things has been fully implemented. Mm. So we cannot, there's no way back. But on the other hand, the other alternative fuels, the other new technology things, I think there's still yet to say.
Mm. Yeah, thank you so much, John. We need to start wrapping up, but I want us to end up in a high note. Lawrence, I know you wanted to share a really concrete example of decarbonization in play today. So please.
Well, I wanted to use this opportunity.
You have 2 minutes.
Yes. I wanted to use this opportunity to show commitment to the green transition despite geopolitics. And this is the story of Bo Olympus. She set sail for the first time. We have a ship with a sail in 110 years. We used suction sails from Bound for Blue, and we installed it over 2 days in Antwerp. She set sail across the Atlantic. We are monitoring real-time the effect of these sails on our fuel consumption. Our simulations prior to make this investment decision was that by simulating the crossing the Atlantic and the Pacific for 10 years back and forth, the average fuel saving would be 10%. So that's part of the story. But when we were in Antwerp, we bunkered her with B-100 with the intention to sail her back to Europe from the US with the combination sail and 100% renewable fuel as a proof of concept. To our knowledge, this will be the first tanker to sail the Atlantic with this combination of truly, and it will truly be a zero emission voyage. So we've talked a little bit today about efficiency, how far can we go? But if we can bring down, we can improve the efficiency so far that we can use more expensive fuels and go zero, we are having that proof of concept. We'll be sharing it. And if everything goes well, she will be back in Europe safely in a couple of months. So that's the story. We have to continue investing. There are smart investments out there, and it is possible to be zero in 2050.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Lawrence. It's difficult to have some closing words after this great example. I hope that next year when we meet all together again, we have more of these concrete examples. I think we need to look long term, and the solutions we adopt need to be good for business. With that, I would really like to thank my panelists, this audience, and obviously the organizers of this stellar event. Thank you so much.